سؤال آخر باللغة الإنجليزية وممكن الدكتور هلدين أن يجيب عليه.
The question is, it seems to me that the cover made can fit any book of its size. Did you come across any cover on which the title is written? Well, the second part of the question is, yes, I have come across covers on which the title is written. We have some loose covers with some titles in our library, quite often saying that this is Kismal Awal Min Al-Atraf, or whatever title it might be, or this is the third part of the third volume of As-Sahih by Al-Bukhari. As to the first part of the question, the cover made can fit any book of its size. Obviously, the original cover was made to fit exactly to the size of the page of text, because unlike European books, the cover did not project beyond the edge of the book, and you got the actual board of the same size as the text block. Now, what did happen was that sometimes covers, when they became detached, or indeed were detached by other binders, were sometimes reused for another manuscript. And you do sometimes get bound manuscripts with covers that are larger than the text blocks. So to some extent, the assumption in the question is correct, that some covers can fit a book of a certain dimension within reason, obviously.
Okay. السؤال الآخر: هل هناك قواعد محددة لمعرفة الجلد الأصلي أو الأصيل والمدعى أنه أصيل أو المدعو أنه أصيل؟
The British Leather Institute, at my request, came and examined a large number of our bookbindings in our collection and were able to confirm the type of leather used, whether it was goat, as I said, or in some cases sheepskin. Rarely also cow was cowhide was used. That was more often used for some Coptic bookbindings. As to whether the leather is genuine or not, I think that as with any aspect of art history, if you are dealing with calligraphy, for example, or paper, to some extent one develops a certain knowledge that you can tell whether or not something is what it sets out to be, and I'm obviously confident of the genuine nature of all the bindings I have shown you today. However, it is true that sometimes, and particularly with the painted bookbindings, you do get some attempts at forgery. We do have a pair of Persian bookbindings, which on first sight might have been produced in, say, the late 16th or early 17th century, but it doesn't take a great deal of examination to realize that these are in fact 19th century copies. And indeed, they may not have been intended as a forgery as such. They may have been produced for someone who wished to bind a book in a traditional pattern of kind of manner of that sort. So it's difficult to tell, but I think to a large part it's a question of experience and handling a large number of these books and manuscripts to be able to analyse whether or not something is the genuine article or not.
سؤال آخر: هل ذكرتم أن أو ذكرتم أن جلد الماعز هو ما يستعمل كثيرا في عملية التجليد وكذلك جلد الأغنام، هل كان جلد الغزال مستعملا؟
I don't know of any cases of gazelle or deer skin being used. It is a very interesting question, however, and I think it would be something particularly to be aware of when examining some of the bindings that are available in some of the libraries in this country, which have not been analysed to that scientific degree. To the best of my knowledge and to the best of the knowledge of my other academic colleagues, both in the United Kingdom and in Chicago, with whom I have discussed these things, in particular Gulnar Bosch, who is Professor Emeritus at the University of Florida. In our opinion, the skins are almost entirely goat. And I think one has to think that herds of goat and sheep, goats and sheep were used for domestic purposes, and skins could obviously be obtained relatively easily. Gazelle or deer skin would actually necessitate going out and hunting for an animal and possibly then the skin being used later, and I think that is less likely.
سؤال ألم تلاحظوا أن هناك علاقة بين النقوش والرسوم على أغلفة الكتب مع ما يوجد على السجاد والخناجر في العالم الإسلامي؟
I think there is a relation between the type of script, the inscriptions that you find on some book bindings, not only with weapons such as daggers, but with other forms of decorative arts, as I mentioned, woodwork in particular, or ivory carving. But I think that what is more significant is the actual type of script used, the quality of the script used, since it all helps to show the quality of the bindery and the craftsman who produced that particular binding.
سؤال هل شاعت الزخارف الهندسية جيومتريك في فترة معينة وفي مكان محدد أم أنها موجودة على امتداد التاريخ الإسلامي وفي أماكن متعددة؟
I think it's true to say that geometric decorations tended to be more frequently used until the 15th, the end of the 15th, early 16th centuries, and were particularly widely used by Arab bookbinders. As to the geographical spread, one does find geometric decorations used in particularly North Africa, Egypt, but you also find less elaborate and slightly modified forms used in South Arabia and Yemen. But I think certainly the high point of geometric decoration was in the Mamluk period, which you also see, as I say, in these other decorative arts. And another question in English: are there any traditions that were governing bookbinding industry, such as apprenticeship, which you know? That's also a very good question, which I don't think I can unfortunately answer. All we do know is that socially the craft of bookbinding, as well as other crafts, papermaking, leather industry generally, undoubtedly was organized on a basis of guilds, rather like that which existed in medieval Europe. And indeed, we do know of certain texts. I think it was a French traveler, Jean-Baptiste Tavernier, who went to Istanbul in the 17th century, who actually describes some of these tanners, these leather makers, the leather industry, who were formed into guilds, and how they sometimes became a bit unruly, and the authorities had to suppress and break up those particular guilds. So I think that undoubtedly the organization of crafts such as bookbinding were organized, you know, on a guild and apprenticeship basis, but I haven't personally come across any textual evidence in Arabic historical texts that give us any indication as to how the details of this might have been organized.
السؤال الآخر من شقين. الأول, نرجو أن تعطينا فكرة عن الكيفية التي تتم بها صناعة الغلاف المطلي بمادة الشيلاك. الشق الآخر, وكيف يمكن إعادة وصل الجزئين الأمامي والخلفي والمفصولين مسبقا بسبب القدم والتلف دون تعريض مادة الشلاك للتفتت.
Covers, I referred to them as varnished covers. It used to be thought that they were called lacquer covers, and it used to be thought that the lacquer technique was the same as that developed in the Far East, in China in particular. Now, however, there was a colloquium at the University of London about 2 years ago, which looked into the whole question of the development of lacquer, the type of gum that was available in Persia, where these bindings were made in particular. And it's considered that it was more of a varnish. That's just a small point to start with. But basically the way in which they were made was that the surface of the cover was primed with something like gypsum, which created the necessary background surface. This then would have been sealed in some way, and then the decoration would have been put on with a water-based paint, painted by hand, as I say, in a watercolor type paint, and then that was sealed again with several layers of this lacquer or varnish to protect it. As to how the two parts of the cover might have been composed, one normally finds that in any of these lacquer covers, one either has a very simple paper inner cover, or one finds that the inner cover is also lacquered, and undoubtedly both the sides of the board would have been prepared, primed with gypsum at the same time. One side would have been painted and sealed, and then the other side would have been painted and sealed. So I don't think there was any great difficulty in putting on the other side of the cover and damaging the lacquer. I think the a much more interesting question, and we don't know the answer, is how the covers which were stamped on the outside but which had this very delicate filigree work on the inside, how some of those were put together without actually causing damage, because undoubtedly, I'm not a practicing bookbinder myself, but all the bookbinders that I have shown these to and asked their opinion as to how they might have been made have all been amazed at the complicated construction of these covers, and are unable to suggest any immediate answers as to how, certainly in present day conditions, we could actually produce something of the same sort.
السؤال الأخير, هل توجد طريقة متفق عليها في تجليد الكتب ليكون فرق الاختلاف مميزا بين الكتب الإسلامية والكتب الأخرى, وما هي طرق الاختلاف؟ ما أدري عن السؤال هذا, ما واضح جدا, لكن أترك الأخ المترجم.
I think the biggest difference between traditional Islamic bookbinding and non-Islamic bookbinding is the actual shape of the book itself. As I have mentioned already, the traditional Islamic book cover was of the same size as the text block, whereas traditionally in European bookbinding, that was not the case. The covers tended to project beyond the actual edge of the text block. Also in European bookbinding, you do not have the flap, which is a particularly Islamic technique. Some people consider that the clasp, which was used in medieval European bookbindings, was in fact a development taken from knowledge of the Islamic bookbindings, because of course the flap protected the outer edges of the text block, as well as giving the librarian or staff to an opportunity to write the title, because books at that stage were traditionally stored flat, and the titles were written along the edge of the spine or the foredge flap, and then stacked up in alcoves. There are pictures in some of the early manuscripts, the Maqamat of Al-Hariri, there's one in London in the British Library, which actually shows the library at Basra, Abu Zaid at the library at Basra, with these alcoves with books stored flat in this method. Otherwise, I think undoubtedly there were connections between the two styles of bookbinding, and in particular, I think the way in which the bookbinders of the Venetian Republic, when they became aware because of strong trade links with Egypt and the Near East, they became aware of the Islamic traditions, and there are quite a number of Venetian bookbindings which are copies of traditional Islamic styles with a corner piece, corner pieces and a central medallion. And so there are these connections, but you can tell straight away from the degree of craftsmanship that these were not done by Islamic craftsmen, but by Europeans copying the certain Islamic styles.
مرة أخرى أشكر المحاضر الكريم على هذا المجهود العلمي الرائع وأشكركم جميعا أيها الإخوة على حضوركم والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.